the House Judiciary Committee. We have two bills up for today, so hopefully this will be a relatively quick meeting. Want to get us the witness sheet on 808, yeah. And we'll go ahead and start. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 808. And we'll bring up whoever signed up on the witness sheet.
Julie McFarland. And Kevin George.
All right, and Kevin George. Is Kevin here?
Hi.
Why don't you come up together, Kevin? And Julie, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Williams and members of the committee. My name is Julie McFarlane. I'm a senior attorney at the Juvenile Rights Project, and I'm here today to speak to you on behalf of A. and Gross Senate Bill 808. We offered this bill this session to address what we see as a critical problem with young people who are aging out of foster care, and that is that they are poorly prepared for the transition to adulthood. We are asking them, for the most part, to leave at 18 years of age, which is much younger than young people in the general population leave home. And we really need to do a better job of preparing them for that transition. And we believe that 808 will help us to do that. What the bill does is requires, puts into statute what DHS is already required to do in terms of planning for these young people, for transitioning them to adulthood, and then also requires the courts and CRBs who already review these cases approximately every 6 months to review as part of the larger plan for the child to also specifically review the transition plan and the elements that we have set out in the statute, in the proposed statute, so that they can have input and help the plan to be a plan that actually can be successful for these young people. So, and this, I think that is this idea of including what's required already by policy in the statute and having having this included in the reviews of the cases is supported both by DHS and by the Citizen Review Boards and the Judicial Department, which does the reviews. We do have, we're asking you today to make a slight amendment. On the other side, we had amended this bill to put in age limitations, and those ended up only going into the 419B 476 portion of the bill, and not into the 419B 343 portion of the bill, which is the part that has to do with the actual planning. And so these age limitations are consistent with DHS policy, and we would like to have the amendment included, and then would recommend that the committee pass this bill out.
All right, why don't we go ahead and hear from Mr. George from DHS, and then we'll open it up to questions from the committee.
Thank you, Chair Williams and members of the committee. My name is Kevin George. I'm the Foster Care Program Manager at the Department of Human Services for Children, Adults, and Families. I'm here at this point in time to say that we are in support of this bill with the proposed amendments that Ms. McFarland has referred to. As we've reviewed the proposed amendments, the department believes that we do not anticipate a fiscal impact with these changes. We do anticipate that there will be a practice change within the field, and that we would likely have our field staff and court staff needing to have some transition period of time of approximately 6 months to better make sure that we're serving this planning process. We'd also just like to acknowledge the appreciation on the behalf of Ms. McFarland, the Juvenile Rights Project, in working with our department and the other agencies in make these amendments to this bill. And therefore, I'd like to support sponsoring of this or the passing of this bill with the amendments as attached. And thank you for allowing me the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. George. Are there questions for either Ms. McFarland or Mr. George about the bill or about the amendments? Ms. McFarland, just so again I understand your testimony about the amendments, the dash A3 amendments simply extend the age issue that was raised originally in the Angros version of the bill in Section 1, and it includes it in the later section of the bill. Is that right?
That's correct.
In Section 3. So just make sure that the age limitations match in both sections of the bill.
That is consistent.
Okay,
yes.
Right. And what is happening right now with respect to this kind of planning? Without this bill, I mean, what's currently taking place generally within the practice of these kids who aren't going to be returning to their original families? Is there not any kind of planning being done for sort of you're going to turn 18 and you're going to be on your own? And
Yes, there is planning that does occur. And it's current in our policy to develop transitional living plans or independent living plan for a youth that is 16 years old or older. And the difference is that for some youth, historically, independent living programs, which is oftentimes more of a service and not necessarily a plan, have been one where folks have referred kids for the services but haven't really developed a very comprehensive plan. And I think the premise behind this bill is to look at a comprehensive plan, and we've gone even further to define what that comprehensive plan is going to look like in terms of addressing the housing, educational, medical, mental health, community support, supportive relationships for kids. At this point in time, we don't have all that in our policy, so this does take that step a little bit further to really clarify that for workers and staff and the courts.
And Ms. McFarland, you said that the CRB folks will do a review of the plan. So explain to the committee, I guess if you could, the role that they'll play in sort of reviewing the plan, and particularly this new additional section.
Chair Williams, members of the committee, the CRB and the juvenile court now review cases approximately every 6 months. ASPA requires an annual permanency review, and most of these children that we're talking about who are older children have a permanency plan and are on that permanency review track. So they have an annual review with the court, and then they'll have a six-month review following that, generally with the CRB, not always, but generally with the CRB. So both the court and the citizen review boards take a hand in reviewing these cases. And with this statute, they will look more specifically. First of all, the documentation that they receive from the agency will now include the transition plan, which it doesn't at this point. So they'll receive a lot of detailed information about what the transition plan is, and then they will actually review that. So they'll be able to look at that plan and say, you know, this may not be the best way to approach housing for this youth, or this may not be the best way to approach education planning for this youth, and they'll be able to give input. And I think the citizen review boards are particularly well suited to that because they usually have a lot of community members who have a lot of knowledge about resources for young people.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? All right, thank you both very much. Is there anyone else here to testify on Senate Bill 808? All right, seeing none, we'll then close the public hearing on Senate Bill 808, and we will open a work session. We have the Dash A3 amendments in front of us.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Move the Dash A3 amendments, House Bill 808.
Representative Shetterly moves the Dash A3 amendments to Senate Bill 808. Is there any discussion on this motion? Any objection to the A3s? They're in the bill. Representative Shetterly.
Move Senate Bill 808 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly moves Senate Bill 808 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on that motion? Let me ask this one question. I didn't ask DHS or Ms. McFarlane. We don't have any subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee, so I'm assuming that everyone is believing there's no fiscal and that this will be absorbed in current practices. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. All right. So the proper motion then that Representative Shetterly has made is to move it to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? All right. Call the roll.
Ackerman.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Barker.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Crummell.
Aye.
McPherson.
Aye.
Devonsky.
Aye.
Shetterly.
Aye.
Chair
Williams. Aye. Senate Bill 808 is amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any volunteer carrier on this bill? Or should I just assign? How about you, Representative Ackerman?
I'll take it.
All right. Thank you. We'll now go to a work session on Senate Bill 19A. I'll open that work session. Council?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 19A, we had a discussion on earlier, I think it was last week, and I believe Representative Przanski, briefly, this is the bill that deals with youth offenders who are over the age of 18. Can they be housed in an adult jail? And I believe you should have two amendments before you. You should have the A4s and the A5s. The A4s are offered by Nancy Miller from the courts, and they are not, they're an add-on amendment that deal with the Citizen Review Board that I believe Timothy Travis spoke to when we last met, but Nancy and Timothy are here. I want to say, because I forgot to do this last time, Carl Myers here on for the bill. Larry Oglesby is here, and I believe last time I did not have them come and talk about the bill, which was my mistake. So they're here as to the bill, the Engross bill. The A5 amendment is a technical amendment that I asked Virginia to draft, and I now, in looking at the bill, I think that the issue is on the A5 amendment is I know that the intent of the parties is that only those people who could be detained in a juvenile detention facility, if they were juveniles, if they're under 18, those were the only ones that would be eligible for detention in a jail. And my concern was that in lines 14 and 15 of the bill, subsection 3, when it uses the language eligible for release, I was concerned that that could be read to really mean any juvenile is eligible for release, and 145 arguably could be read to say that these are just the reasons you could detain detain rather than saying who is eligible. So I had Virginia write those, but I talked to Mr. Oglesby and Mike, and I don't know if they're the greatest amendments. Maybe the proponents could say whether they are for them or against them. I think the more important thing that I undertook and was asked to undertake by Representative Przanski was to look at the Tewksbury decision that was raised, I think, by Ms. McFarland last time we talked about the bill. And briefly, the Tewksbury decision is from 1982, and it's a decision that held that, it had to do with some juveniles that were held in Columbia County Correctional Facility, which was an adult jail where there were adults and juveniles. And the plaintiffs in that case argued that the pretrial detention violated their client's 14th Amendment due process rights. Those children in that case were not 18. They ranged from, they ranged from 12 to 18. I don't think it ever said that whether they were exactly 18 or over 18. It also only dealt with the pretrial detention of such youths. And under the statute at that time, post-trial, a youth couldn't have been held in an adult facility. And I read that case and looked at it, and then looked at also a case called Shawl versus New York, and did some research on that case, because in that case, the U.S. Supreme Court talks about due process and touches on a statute in New York that does allow youths, and it doesn't mention if they're 18 or not, youths to go into adult facilities in, I think they use the term extreme, let me look for mine. Exceptional circumstances. So New York State does allow any juvenile, if these exceptional circumstances are present, to be housed in an adult jail. And this case was about pretrial detention in general, but the court noted that that, and I think that is instructive, that I think that we can look at this, that in Tewksbury it talks about the special solicitude of the juvenile courts, and I think that 19 on its face, with the requirements that have to be met, would fall in under that, and also under the Shull case, that a youth who has turned 18, who the court is making these specific findings that their needs can be met in jail, and that they would be eligible for detention in juvenile court, would be, I think, the kind of exceptional circumstances that the courts would look at. I think that it's difficult in this kind of case, because I think that a lot of what it's going to come down to is the actual jail that they're put in, and it's going to be a substantive due process argument, and I think that clearly the attorney for the child will be there at this hearing that the court is going to have to determine whether this meets the specific needs of the child, and I'm sure that they will be able to argue ably that that it won't. So I think that the due process that this has would satisfy that.
Okay, counsel. And tell us about whose are the dash A3s?
The A3s were superseded by the A4s.
Okay,
and
so they're withdrawn.
Correct.
All right. So the A3s are withdrawn.
Correct.
Why don't we start with Mr. Myers, if you want to come up. Do you want to bring anybody with you, Carl?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to bring Larry Oglesby up from the association.
Hi, Larry.
Morning, Chair. Afternoon?
Afternoon, morning. It doesn't matter to us.
Mr. Chair.
That's right. Yeah,
excuse
go ahead,
me. Carl. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Carl Myers, on behalf of the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association, speaking in favor of 19A, Senate Bill 19A, and I want to make just a few comments to make sure that the direction that we're trying to take with 19A is clearly understood, and that what we're not trying to do is also clearly understood. 19A simply is a tool to give a judge to handle some exceptional cases or some special cases that arise in juvenile court matters where the person who would be subject to the jurisdiction of the juvenile court or is in the jurisdiction of the juvenile court becomes an adult. That occurs in essentially two ways. One is that juvenile has been part of the juvenile system, is on some kind of a probationary program, and may violate the probation that extended beyond that person's 18th birthday. It violates it after their 18th birthday, and the court wants some kind of sanction or process to deal with that violation of probation. The other instance is a case in which a person commits a crime as a juvenile but is not taken into custody until they've reached their 18th birthday. And in both instances, it is a situation as to where the judge is going to put this person for either holding until there is a trial, or in the case of the person already within the jurisdiction, what they're going to do in as part of a sanction for violation of the juvenile court probation. Everyone who has looked at the bill, with the possible exception of the Juvenile Rights Project, agrees that there is no constitutional problem on the face of the bill. The proponents will acknowledge that there may be some constitutional problems in the application if a judge does not follow the standards that are set forth in the bill as to the appropriate process for handling these cases. The bill does not allow, and I want to make it clear, does not allow a juvenile, a person under the age of 18, to be placed in a jail. We're only dealing with that class of persons that have reached the age of 18 but are either going to be subject to or under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court. And you might guess that that is a fairly limited universe of folks. Again, there may be some judges who do not follow the statute if 19A is adopted, and there are maybe some due process problems with the application of that. But I would submit to you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that almost every criminal bill that you pass out of here and almost every bill that comes out of the legislature has a potential due process application if the courts do not apply it correctly. We believe that the due process aspects of 19A are sufficient to meet constitutional muster under the cases that the counsel mentioned, particularly the Shaw case out of a U.S. Supreme Court case out of New York. Because 19A requires before a person is placed in a jail under 19A that there is a hearing and that there are findings made that this is in the essentially in the best interest of the child or the person in this case. So we believe that the constitutional question that was raised at the last work session may be there. We believe that we've limited the potential of a constitutional challenge, but as we all know, in these kinds of areas, there are constitutional challenges at some point. But we believe the Shaw case, which was which we recently discovered and Mr. Prinz set forth or talked about in his opening, answers those questions significantly, particularly in the pretrial detention area. And I might say that one of the things I found most interesting about Shaw is it says that if there is a violation of due process, and these in Shaw it was dealing with children, not adults, but it said that there are ways to appeal that through the court process if there is an error through habeas corpus proceedings or other proceedings that are available. So with that, I would be happy to try to address any questions the committee has. Let me say, for the record, our position, the juvenile department directors, the proponents of the bill, is we would like the bill as 19A, and we will the A4 and the A5 amendments are satisfactory to us. I have looked at the A5 amendments, and I am not sure they're absolutely necessary. But if they further clarify that all the provisions of the juvenile code still apply to these persons that we're talking about falling under 19A, so much the better. But we do oppose the A2 amendments that have been proposed by the Juvenile Rights Project because, in essence, they would require all of these adults to be placed in detention, which I think you can imagine there would be circumstances where that would be very inappropriate to put, say, a 21, 22, 23-year-old adult into detention simply because they violated a juvenile probation or have been arrested on a charge that occurred when they were a juvenile.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just three quick points. One, the individuals we're talking about in Senate Bill 19A are all persons who have reached the age of majority. These are persons over the age of 18 who, for all other purposes, are considered adults who simply have some form of juvenile court jurisdictions still attached to them. Secondly, the only portion of their involvement in the system that would be involved the adult system would be the time that they spent in the adult jail. All of the other procedures, hearings, protections are those still in the juvenile court. And then lastly, in talking with other juvenile directors, talking with judges, this is clearly a problem that needs to be fixed. And what I discovered is that in many cases, kids who need to be held simply are not being held at all because of this question that hangs over us in terms of whether detention is okay, adult jail is okay. I guess the Court of Appeals said adult jail is not okay. And in some counties, they take the lesser of evils approach and house them in juvenile because they believe that their chances of getting sued and their liability be less than the other way around. But clearly it's a case where we need to have some resolution to this, and we believe this is a kind of a common sense approach to this which would resolve the issue. It still places within the responsibility of the court to make findings and to determine what's in the best interest of an individual before they make their determination.
All right, are there questions for Mr. Myers or Mr. Ogle to speak? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification, if a kid commits a crime before he's 18, excuse me, as a juvenile, but he's tried after he's 18, he still is tried in the juvenile system.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that is correct. Unless he's waived or it's a major open offense, he would be tried in the juvenile system, yes.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. Travis, Ms. Miller, do you need to address the A4 amendments? Well, why don't you come up? I apologize. I was out of the room for much of the previous hearing on this, and so some of this is catch-up for me. So if you want to just tell us what the A4s do, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nancy Miller. I'm the director of the Court Programs and Services Division in the State Court Administrator's Office. In that capacity, I also serve as the director of the Citizen Review Board Program. Before I get into the A4s, let me just say very briefly on the Angros version of Senate Bill 19. This is a bill that the judges feel strongly about. They do support it. They do want to be able to have the tools to hold these youth offenders accountable. So just leave it at that. The A4s are basically a housekeeping bill or housekeeping amendment for the Citizen Review Board. It changes our statute back to the way it was before the DHS reorg bill passed last session, House Bill 2294. Our CRB statute has always said that a person who worked for previously CSD, then STF, could not serve on a CRB, or anybody contracting with CSD or SCF, as the names evolved over the years, could not serve on a CRB for obvious reasons of potential conflict of interest. When DHS introduced its reorg bill last session, all the statutes changed the SCF to DHS. So now anyone who works for DHS, contracts with DHS, or is in a facility licensed, but works in a facility licensed by DHS, can't be on a CRB. What that does is say, for example, someone who's providing potentially services under the Oregon Health Plan can't be on a CRB. Somebody who is in seniors and people with disabilities or running a nursing home who contracts with DHS can't be on a CRB. So this makes it clear that only those people who work for DHS providing child protective services or contracting can't be on a CRB. The other thing that it does on page 2 of the amendments is just clarifies our ability to accept funds and assistance from public and private sources. We've changed the wording around a little bit. As you can see, it says apply for and receive funds. As we've had to make budget reductions, we've cut some of our statewide training. We've cut some of our statewide meetings for volunteers. Our volunteers are fabulous people and have wanted to make donations so that we can still provide that training. And that word apply for and accept gave our financial people a little bit of pause, even though that was the original intent of the legislation. So we just made it clear that we can accept funds and assistance from public and private sources. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Other questions? Thank you for clarifying the amendments, Nancy. And then, Council, I know you gave us initially your thoughts on the A5s. Can you walk us back through the A5s?
I will. My concern, and I talked to Larry and Carl about this, is the A5s, when you look at lines 14 and 15 of the bill, if you have the Angros bill, which says the court may not detain a person under subsection 1 of this section if, except for the person's age, the person, and here's the part I was concerned about, would be eligible for release under 419C145. I think that arguably any youth is eligible for release under that section, and that section talks about which ones may not be held in subsection 1, meaning that you can only hold those that do have you know, certain types of crimes. And then subsection 2 then deals with they should be released unless certain factors are met, meaning that there's no less restrictive means available. So I was concerned that that eligible for release could be read more broadly than I think the proponents wanted, which I think what they meant was those that could be held in a detention facility, those are the only ones over 18 that could be held in a jail. So that's what the A5s, I think, stated positively. I will note that I think, and Mr. Travis pointed this out to me, the A5 is really almost redundant with subsection 2 of the bill on lines 8 and 9, which says only in those circumstances in which the juvenile court could detain a youth before adjudication on the merits in a detention facility. So my concern was if we're going to be redundant or we're going to emphasize this, at least there's not this argument that eligible for release means any youth.
All right. Questions for Mr. Prince about the A5 amendments?
And Mr. Chairman, I'll also say that I don't want to muck things up if it's more confusing with them. So I just, you know, sometimes when I try to make things better, I make them worse. So.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Shadow.
I guess how I'd be interested to hear from Carl and Larry, perhaps.
I think they did testify that they were fine. They were fine with the A. They were fine with. They weren't sure they were necessary, but they didn't think they did any harm.
Well, we do lots of things that aren't necessary. Yeah. All the time.
Representative Prezant.
I just want to thank Craig for his work and diligence in putting together the memorandum for us and picking the time to explain it.
Yeah.
For me, it's made it very clear for me and comfortable to move forward. And I also think on the A5s, based on what we've heard from the proponents, that it would give clarity to make certain that there isn't any confusion as to who is intended to be covered.
All right. Representative Jensen.
Mr. Chair, we're in work session.
We are in work session.
I'll move the dash A5 amendments to Senate Bill 19.
Representative Jensen moves the dash A5 amendments to Senate Bill 19. Is there any discussion on the motion on the A5s? Any objections? Okay, the A5s are in the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen?
I move the dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill
19. Representative Jensen moves the dash A4 amendments to Senate Bill 19. Is there any discussion on the A4s? Any objection? The A4s are in. Representative Jensen?
I'll move the Senate Bill 19 as amended to the floor to pass recommendation.
Representative Jensen moves Senate Bill 19 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? All right. Hearing none, call the roll.
Ackerman?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Barker?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Cromwell?
Aye.
McPherson?
Aye.
Devonsky?
Aye.
Satterley?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 19, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And, colleagues, that concludes our work for the day. I will tell you that we do not have a committee meeting tomorrow. Oh, I'm sorry.
Carrier.
Oh, Carrier. I apologize. Representative Prezanski?
I'll do it.
Yeah, if you'd carry it, I'd appreciate that. We don't have a committee meeting tomorrow. We will have a committee meeting on Monday. The two subjects that are up on Monday, just to give you a preview if you haven't looked at the agenda already, the SAFE MedMal proposal, to which I believe we came to a compromise solution that is going to be endorsed, I think, on Monday by the participants. So that'll be up for discussion and review and amendments. And then also we'll have the supersedious bond. I think it's Senate Bill 880. It's the supersedious bond limitation issue that will be up on Monday as well. So, and I suspect those two bills alone will